Good evening, everyone. If you have your Bible, go ahead and turn to the fifth chapter of Daniel. Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5. Kind of set the stage for what we're looking at tonight. I want to tell you about the 19th century Scottish doctor who was also an explorer, exploring Africa on behalf of the Queen of England. His name was David Livingstone. He had been in Africa about 12 years, and he had a desire to travel from where he was on the east coast of the continent over to the west coast through an area that no other European had ever been. And he knew it was impossible to do on his own, and so he went to a local tribal chief, and he asked this chief for 27 men of the local tribe who would go with him. Now, the chief had come to respect Dr. Livingstone over the years that he had been there, but he was still a little suspicious that if he let these men go, the tribe would never see them again, because the trip was dangerous, and he had learned that not all white men are entirely trustworthy. But Livingstone, sensing the chief's reservations, made him a promise. He said, "If you give me your sons, I promise to return with them and to deliver them personally to their homes and their families. My life will be a pledge." So the chief agreed on that basis, because Livingstone had so lived his life among them that he felt he was trustworthy. And so Livingstone set out. Now, the journey was every bit as dangerous as predicted. There was difficult terrain. There were some hostile tribes to deal with, dangerous animals, sicknesses to overcome. But finally, they made it all the way to the west coast, to the port of Luanda, which had been their goal. When they arrived, they were amazed to find in this port a British warship. Even more amazing, they soon discovered that the warship had been sent from England for one specific purpose. Queen Victoria had sent that warship to find Livingstone and bring Livingstone back to England. And so the captain of the ship came to Dr. Livingstone and said, "Sir, Queen Victoria has sent me to urge you to return. All England is waiting to honor you." Now, in that day, when the Queen invited someone to do something, it was, in most cases, not a request, it was a command. That the recollection of the dangerous life he'd been living in Africa, along with the thought of going home to great honors, you know, all of that must have really tied together to form a great temptation for Livingstone to board the ship. But Dr. Livingstone had a problem. He had made a promise. A promise to an African chief on the other side of the continent to return with the men and personally deliver the men back home to their families and to the tribe. He gave his regrets to the captain, and the captain tried to talk him out of it and assured him that the promise of a white man to an African doesn't matter, and the queen is more important than any local tribal chief. Very tempting. But Livingstone had made a commitment, and despite the urging of the naval officers who were there, he turned around and headed back into the jungle with these men. The round trip took 2.5 years. But it ended with him keeping his word, delivering these people back to their homes. Dr. Livingstone was a man who put principle over the honors that could be bestowed upon him, over the acclaim and the applause of people. And that was probably why, when he died, the Africans were very committed to burying his heart in Africa. They were more than willing to listen to a man who could not be bought with promises of fame and accolation. Now, tell you that story to set the stage, because 2,400 years before Dr. David Livingstone made that choice, there was another man who was promised great honor, not by a queen, but by a king. And it all hinged on whether or not he could interpret a certain message written miraculously in the plaster of a wall in the king's banquet hall. And the honor would have been great riches, great acclaim, and the promise that he would be the third ruler in the kingdom. The message on the wall was very bad news for the king, which at this time is Belshazzar. The unspoken pressure of the moment is to avoid telling the truth so as not to embarrass the king in front of all of his nobles at a feast that he's holding. And that man, Daniel, told that king, Belshazzar, that he could keep his riches, keep his honor to himself, and then, rather than bowing to the pressure of the moment, he honored his lifelong commitment to truth and serving the living God, and he told him what the message was. The account is in Daniel chapter 5. We're going to look at it this evening. This is the fifth sermon in the sixth sermon series from Daniel, and tonight's lesson I've called When They Call for Your Honor. Because all of us are probably sometime in our life going to be faced with the temptation to put the applause and acclamation and the honoring that the world wants to bestow, we're going to have to face the temptation to put that above and beyond some principle that we live by because we're Christians. This could be from, you know, and it could range in a lot of different ways. It could be from the junior high student who gives in and does things he knows are wrong in order to be given a spot of acceptance among his peers, to the man who offered a position if he would keep quiet about certain things. There's always going to be a temptation to accept applause over what is right in every stage of life. And there are many people who succumb to it and sell themselves out before God. And we would do well to pay attention to the lessons that we learn from Daniel here in Daniel chapter 5. Now let me set the stage, because what we have is a time break between chapter 4 and chapter 5. And the time break is about 20 years. And these 20 years have passed, and the reign of Nebuchadnezzar is done. And we read about Nebuchadnezzar and his reign during the first four chapters of Daniel. During that time, Babylon has had several rulers in this 20-year period between the two chapters, and has been following a sharp, steep moral decline. The lesson that had been learned by Nebuchadnezzar about honoring the God of heaven after living 7 years like an animal had been disregarded by the rulers who came after him. And because of that neglect and the pending judgment of God, Belshazzar, a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, is about to lose the kingdom. Now, at the time of the events, the city of Babylon is under siege by the Persian army. The city of Babylon is fully surrounded by Persia's army. All the gates of the city are locked and barred. There is a massive wall that is surrounding the city. It provides, for their time period, a state-of-the-art sense of security, because it's impossible for an army to break through this wall. They have a 20-year supply of food laid up. The Euphrates River runs right through the center of town, and so they have plenty of fresh water. And Belshazzar is confident that he can simply wait out the siege that the Persians are waging against the city. So secure is he that the walls are impregnable, that the walls are really virtually unguarded. And he wants to rally the morale of the people. And so he decides, in the midst of this conquering army surrounding the city, he decides to put on a huge banquet, probably with the intent of putting a good spin on the recent turn of events and assuring everybody that everything's going to come out all right. That's where we pick up the story as it's recorded in Daniel chapter 5. So let's look at the first four verses of Daniel 5. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords and his wives and the concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Now, what better way, in his mind, he's thinking, to show his nobles his confidence than to mock the God that his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had accepted in the latter part of his reign. With all the bravado that he could muster, he calls for the vessels that have been taken out of the temple themselves, and he begins to use them in a profane manner. He uses them to toast the other gods that they have in the temple, in the palace. Can you imagine what was going through God's mind? And little did Belshazzar know that as he was mocking the God of heaven, he was mocking him for the last time, and that this night would be Belshazzar's last night on this earth. All right, let's continue on. Something happens in verse 5. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed and his thoughts troubled him, so that his joints of his hip were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. And the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled, his countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. Let's stop right there for a moment. Here they are, sitting there in this banquet hall, 1,000 men gathered. They're drinking and toasting to their various idols that they've got around, and suddenly a hand appears, and with its fingers it writes a message on the wall. And Belshazzar sees it happening. He witnesses it writing those words. And nobody can read the words that are written there. Nobody can even make sense of what is written there. They can't understand the alphabet. It doesn't look like anything that comes from Babylon. It's not their alphabet. And all of the wise men come, and not a single one can read what's there. What's interesting is that Daniel is no longer among the wise men. In this 20-year period of time, something has happened where they have pushed him aside, and he's not called to be there. But that doesn't stay that way for long. Word of the handwriting on the wall incident spreads quickly, and it reaches the ears of the queen. Now, the scholars suggest that the woman we're about to read about is either Belshazzar's mother or his grandmother. In other words, if it's his grandmother, then it is the very woman who was the wife of King Nebuchadnezzar, and she knows firsthand what God can do. If it's his mother, then she still probably witnessed what God did to Nebuchadnezzar. But look at what happens, beginning with verse 10. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. In other words, she wasn't there. She wasn't invited. And the queen spoke, saying, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the Spirit of the Holy God. And she's the only one who calls God that in the kingdom anymore, besides Daniel and his friends. She still believes. She still understands. And she goes on and she says, And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers, inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation. A couple of things there. Notice that she mentions that the king had named him Belshazzar, but she calls him Daniel because, remember, Belshazzar was a name that reflected Nebuchadnezzar's own original belief in a particular god of the Babylonians. And after in the previous chapter, after Nebuchadnezzar had this experience in which God humbled him, and he came to have faith in the Most High God, he started calling Daniel Daniel instead of Belshazzar anymore, because he did not want to reflect that pagan god anymore. And the queen does the same thing. She mentions who he is, and you know, who, if you're going to look him up in the official role, but she calls him Daniel as well. Now, what an irony. Belshazzar has been using the very things taken from the temple of the Most High God in Jerusalem to toast the other gods in his kingdom. He's been using it to make fun of that God. But now he's forced to call in this spokesman of the God he's just been mocking. And notice what happens. Then Daniel, verse 13, was brought in before the king, and the king spoke and said to Daniel, Are you the Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard of you, that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. In other words, he's echoing the queen's words. Now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me that they should read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not give the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of you that you give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Now let's stop. Again, think about what kind of honor and acclaim is being offered to Daniel here. A purple robe, a sign of great honor, a gold necklace, probably a sign of authority, and a third ruler in the kingdom. Not a bad promotion at all, especially since you seem to have been tossed aside and removed out of being the leader of the wise men, like he was under Nebuchadnezzar. Now remember, the mood here had been one of confidence and security, even bravado. The city wall could keep out any army. At this point, no one in Belshazzar's cabinet had any reason to believe that they weren't safe, that the kingdom wouldn't endure. Had Daniel been thinking like many men, he would have taken a look at all that human security and thought, this kingdom is secure. I still have some years left. It would be great to be vice president. Perhaps I should tell him that the message is one of support from one of his gods, because I certainly don't want to upset him in front of all his nobles. But like Dr. David Livingstone, it would have been the equivalent of climbing aboard the warship, heading back to England, and just turning his back on his principles and his word. A claim over principle. But like Livingstone, Daniel's principles weren't for sale. Daniel couldn't be bought with any riches or any honor, and that's the chief lesson for us. And so here's what he did. Here's what Daniel answers in verse 17. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation." Just keep all your honor for yourself. Keep your reward for yourself. And I'll still give you what this thing says. And then notice what he tells him is the message. "O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory, and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and language trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whoever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses." He recounts to him what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. "But you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this, and you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver, gold, bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written, and this is the inscription that was written: Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharshin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians." Then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple, put a chain of gold around his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. You know, it's so easy to get our eyes off the right target. In what Daniel recounts, he says, "Look, you should have learned the lesson of Nebuchadnezzar because you knew it, you saw it, you lived through it." And he says, "This hand was sent by the God of heaven to give you a message. And the message is you have been weighed and found wanting. And your time is at hand." History tells us that what happened was that while Belshazzar was having a grand banquet, Darius the Mede had his men divert the river Euphrates that ran through the middle of town. And as the water level lowered, he sent men under the sluice gates into the city. Nobody was looking. And they just simply walked in through the river that it, as the water receded. They just simply walked in, and then they simply opened up the gates, and they flooded into the city. And that night, Belshazzar was put to death. Now, what can we learn about the principle of honor and acclaim and how we should be living? I suggest four things from this text. I suggest that, number one, we need to remember the real issue. We need to remember that there is something greater at stake than simply the things that happen in this world. That there is another world out there. The thing Daniel needed to remember and wanted to have the king understand is that you can't keep putting God down. Because God will have a day of reckoning with each and every one of us. And that's one of the things we've got to remember. There is something more to life than what we get here. The second message is the second principle or lesson is we don't change the message. There's no indication here that Daniel even considered changing the message. And yet, we have warnings in the New Testament that that is indeed what many will be tempted to do. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3, Paul writes, after he's given an exhortation to Timothy to preach the word in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort. He says this in verse 3, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires and will turn away their ears from the truth and turn aside to myths." We've seen it happen. We read, the fact that the entire denominational world exists is evidence that that has taken place. People collect for themselves messengers who will tell them what they want to hear. We can't change the message. The third thing to learn is that we need to consider what's appropriate. It's interesting that back in chapter 2, when Daniel was offered gifts and a reward and great honor by Nebuchadnezzar for interpreting the dreams, he accepted it. He accepted it not only for himself, but for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were also honored, and the king kept that promise. But that king was in the process of coming to have a faith in God, and they knew that. They knew that he was in that process. Why is there a difference here? Is Daniel being inconsistent? No, I don't think so. I think Daniel understood this man would never change. So he can keep his honor. He can keep his wealth and his position of power. Even though he tried to bestow those upon Daniel and all of that, Daniel had told him, "I really don't want these." Why? Because he did not want to put anything ahead of God. And perhaps the greatest lesson in all of this is that we need to fear God's judgment. Maybe you've heard the phrase, "the handwriting is on the wall." That phrase comes directly from this event. And it's a phrase indelibly written in the hearts of men throughout the centuries because of what happened here. For Belshazzar, the handwriting was literally on the wall. But even today, we understand that the handwriting can be on the wall for somebody is a statement that God is going to judge sometime, sooner or later. You see, the thing about all of this is that Belshazzar knows that you cannot get away with mocking God for very long. And that is exactly what Belshazzar was doing. He was mocking God. And sooner or later, everyone will be dealt with in an appropriate way. We need to be a people who are like Daniel. We don't change the message. We don't bow to the pressure. We simply speak and live for God because we've committed our life to His. This evening, let's encourage one another as together we stand and sing our song of invitation, knowing that God has blessed each one of us with salvation, and we have made a commitment in return to live for Him. Well, together we stand and sing.